this week, we've been hearing excerpts, amazing excerpts, from the diaries of First World War nurse Edith Appleton. She spent 5 years at Ypres and witnessed the best and the worst of humanity there.
March the 13th. My poor little boy Kerr died yesterday. He had been in 15 days suffering from gas, dangerously ill all the time, but only the day before yesterday he realised that he was not going to get well. Yesterday he would call, "Sister," and when I bent down would hear, "I do love you. When I'm gone, will you kiss me?"
Amazing. Well, her journals came to light and have just been published this month through the efforts of her great-nephew Dick Robinson from Blockley, who joins me on the phone from there now. Hello, good afternoon to you, Dick.
Hello, Anna.
This, I feel like this has been a culmination of an awful lot of effort for you. Do you feel like you have come to the end of a long journey on this one?
Well, I think the journey's still continuing. It has been a lot of effort, and I'm having a bit of fun with it now, which includes talking to you. But no, I began this about 5 years ago, following a chance conversation with a neighbour. I mentioned I had these diaries, and she asked to look at them, and then rang me up and said, "They're wonderful, and you've got to get them published." And I set up a website with the text of all of the diaries, and then the BBC did some excerpts. And now we've got a book.
Absolutely. If it was only that straightforward. But yes, we got there in the end. So how did you come across these documents? Because they literally, these journals have been untouched for years, haven't they?
Yes, what happened is Edie, my great-aunt, died in 1958, and she was living in the Isle of Wight, where I remember her visiting her many times as a child. My mother and her sister went and cleared the house, and my mum must have picked up a pile of these books, put them in a drawer, and I remember aged about 17 I first came across them, and I got quite interested because they had exciting accounts of German planes, and I started typing them up, and being 17 I got interested in other things, and they went back in a drawer until my mum died in 1997, and I in turn cleared her house and I took them over, and they went back into another drawer.
Yeah. Well, it's good they've stayed in the light this time round for sure. But I guess the Edith that you knew, your great aunt, possibly very different from the Edith as she writes in her journals.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I knew her. I get one could say towards the end of her life, living in a house in the Isle of Wight. This was just after the war, 1946. We actually went and lived with there because we'd been abroad. And came back, and I and my sister and my parents lived in their house for a few months while my dad went and found a house for us. And, you know, things were pretty tight then. Rationing, I think, was worse just after the war. And I remember, you know, a rather austere house. Edie is quite a sort of upright and severe elderly lady. But, it was a lovely place with a wonderful garden with loads of chickens and an orchard and a veg garden.
Wonderful. And yet, I guess she didn't, well, you were too young probably to remember, but she didn't speak much about, or at all perhaps, about these experiences.
No, not at all. I mean, people always say this, don't they? It's very common. People, particularly, I think, in relation to the First World War, but in the Second World War, and now we know the tragic stories of people coming back from Afghanistan who've been so traumatised by it. But no, I certainly never spoke to it, and I doubt whether my parents did. My mother's sister's still alive, and she's in her late 90s, and she says she never spoke about it.
It does make you wonder, doesn't it? I often think this, how many people we lose, and all those amazing memories and historical stories go with them, and we don't ever perhaps realise, you know, just what amazing things they could have told us had we realised.
No, I think that's true. I mean, I feel very fortunate to have become the owner of the diaries, and you know, and to be able to share them with other people. But I'm sure I'm not alone. You know, I'd encourage people to check through their own cupboards and drawers and see what they've got, because I'm sure there are precious, precious things lurking there.
The extraordinary thing is, as you said, this is an ongoing process, because now the broadcasts have happened and now the book has happened. She does mention, I think, is it over 200 different named people that she nursed? And well, some of those relatives of those people have started to come forward, including, as we heard from the poignant story there, of Charlie Kerr. Is that right?
Yes, he's the latest. I've actually five people have been in touch with me, descendants of people whom Edie names. And only 10 days ago now, I had a message out of the blue from a woman who is the great-great-niece of Charlie Kerr. He was very young. He didn't have a family, but this woman's great-grandmother was Charlie's sister. And it's just so powerful, I find it, connecting with families. You know, our families were together nearly 100 years ago, and somehow we've met again. She lives up in Bury, near Manchester, and I'm hoping to go and meet her. We've spoken, and it's amazing, really, those sort of contacts.
Yes, and we heard the little extract there where she talks about Charlie's death, but also she goes on to say she did keep that promise, and she did kiss him afterwards on behalf of his mum and also behalf of her. So that must be quite a powerful thing for his relative to hear.
I think it is. I mean, there've been the first person who contacted me was about 3 years ago now, who was the great niece of Sergeant Partlin, someone else who died, an older man who died in Edie's care. And there's another extraordinary story connected with that about his wife travelling all the way out from Accrington up in Lancashire and travelling down through Britain and across the Channel where, you know, there was conflict taking place to be at his bedside until he died. I didn't know that families did that. One can't imagine how easy that would have been.
No, not easy at all anyway, let alone during wartime. And it does, you know, it's all these names that you see on memorials or when you're doing your family history, and it's just a name and a date, isn't it? It does. It's real life and real people. It just absolutely makes them three-dimensional, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, I'm hoping now the book is published that there may be more. And it's an amazing, you know, it's just such an amazingly powerful thing to meet those people. Because sometimes what Edie writes is totally fresh information for the families. You know, they just didn't know. So, one would have to ask them how they felt about it.
Yeah. There is an introduction to the book by Michael Morpago, author of War Horse and Man of the Moment. And you have connections with him, is that right?
Well, it's another story about the value of a diary. Back in the 1960s, I had a lovely job running a bar in a place just off Piccadilly in London. And I wrote wonderful diaries. I mean, I cringe reading them now. Really.
Now, don't throw them away.
No, I won't. Well, worse than that, I asked my 18-year-old granddaughter to type them up for me. And she did that. And she sent it to me. And I came across this reference to meeting Michael and Claire Morpurgo. And I'd forgotten that. And I contacted him. Of course, he'd forgotten it as well, because it was before he was famous. And he very sweetly wrote a really lovely foreword to the diary. So that's very precious. But my granddaughter had great fun. You know,
seen you in a different light now as well, hasn't she?
Well, I was writing about my sort of broken heart, you know, with a girlfriend at the time before I met her granny, and she, Granddad, you're so naive, you know, which is wonderful coming from your granddaughter.
Proof if proof were needed, keep those diaries. Whoever you are,
absolutely,
keep them, because we may think they're just, you know, of the moment, but goodness me, they don't half reflect an age and can give you a little glimpse into people's lives. Lovely to talk to you. And I know you've been doing a few talks as well, haven't you? You had book signings and everything. How's that been?
Yes, that was terrific. I was really happy about that. We went to the Cotswold Bookstore in Moreton. Last Saturday, and in 2 hours they sold 65 copies of the book. And I gave a talk in Blockley, and 100 people turned up, and I'm happy to do talks elsewhere, you know, if people would like this, illustrated talks and someone reading extracts.
Yeah, well, it's wonderful to speak to you, and quite the lady, I have to say, quite a lady was Edie by all accounts. Lovely to speak to you. Dick Robinson there, then, from Blockley. Isn't that interesting? If you'd like to read the diaries of First World War nurse Edith Appleton, they are, as of this month, available then, and you can get them at bookshops. I'll tell you all the details in just a while, and you can also find out more about her on the internet. There is a website set up by Dick that tells you more about it. It's edithappleton.org.uk.
BBC Radio Gloucestershire.